The exultant closing gloria from Dave Brubeck's Mass to Hope, a Celebration. The Cathedral Choral Society Chorus and Orchestra was conducted by Russell Gloyd. And that was remembering Dave Brubeck, who died on the 5th of December. And that's it for this week's edition of Sunday Morning. Next week, my theme at 10 is Winter Dreams, with music by, among others, Schubert, Liszt, Tchaikovsky, Debussy and Hans Pfitzner. And after 11, I have more Mozart for you, Barry Tuckwell playing Mozart's first horn concerto. So please do join me if you can next Sunday, same time, 9 o'clock. Sunday Morning is a unique production with studio production this week by Neil Miners.
Hi, I'm violinist Joshua Bell. Please join me and pianist Sam Haywood as we play Schubert, Strauss and Prokofiev live in concert.
Joshua Bell in concert on BBC Radio 3, Tuesday night at 7:30.
This is BBC Radio 3. The time is just after 12 o'clock. Time now for Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Caroline Charles is one of our most consistently successful and sought-after designers. Over five decades, her clothes have adorned the likes of Lulu, Marianne Faithfull, Cilla Black. She's made suits for Mick Jagger and Ringo Starr. Princess Diana was a regular client, as well as Emma Thompson. I think when you first started, Caroline, it was with a very simple piece of material, like a bedspread or a sheet or something.
Yes, you're right. There was a famous white bedspread that got cut up and made itself into a very nice dress, says she modestly, but it went on the backs of Cilla Black and the like, stars of their day and always. So life did start quite simply.
How did you start? I mean, I think, especially for young people, it's often an interesting question. What actually happened? Did you know this was something you always wanted to do?
Yes, I always wanted to do it, certainly consciously, from about 11. And I was the sort of person, sort of child, who liked to sew and knit and weave and do everything to do with making, but making things for clothes, not anything useful like engineering, but proper soft clothes that people could really wear.
Quite practical.
Very.
You have, I always remember from the first time I met you some time back, that you have a kind of slightly Audrey Hepburn-like elegance about you. And that, I think, is also a hallmark of your clothes, if I might say so.
Oh, you might, definitely. Thank you very much indeed. She is a real fashion icon, Audrey is. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go in her slipstream. But she has a neatness and an elegance, you're right. And I do love that about her and about clothes that follow in her look.
You've designed this programme, and I'm rather pleased that you have, because we've not had this before, as though you were thinking in terms of a fashion show with different strands creeping in, but a theme.
Well, I have, yes. I had to justify my existence on this very erudite programme of yours. And the fashion shows come round in February, and that's for autumn, because we always work so far ahead, and then September for spring. So this spring, I was wanting a very tropical, exotic mood as an opener, and I want the audience to have a very good time, because fashion shows are really 20 minutes of precious time for the audience, and it needs to be on every level interesting, entertaining, hopefully sexy even, if you're lucky. But the music from Mali, which I chose as an opener this season, I'd known about it for ages, and I'd admired Rai Kuda, and Ali Faka Touré is obviously fantastically famous of that genre of music. And it fitted with my girls, who came on to a sort of sun-up lighting, and then they took positions as of dummies. And then gradually, as the music opens, they start to move. I should explain that these fashion shows have about a two-hour run-in from the arrival of a girl, 25 hairdressers, 14 makeup artists, and God knows who else backstage, and suddenly you have to go on. There is no rehearsal at all.
So it's mayhem, and then suddenly it happens or it doesn't.
And then it's over. Absolutely mad way to entertain anybody, but it's the nature of the game, and so we do it every time.
Well, we'll imagine it all unfolding as we listen to Ali Fakature and indeed Rai Kuda. Thank you. I can see how that would work very well, that if your eye was on somebody and you had that music going on, it doesn't distract, but it would give them an ability to strike poses.
Yes, and emerge from them. And you always have to obviously be able to walk to the beat or through the beat and explain that. But I'm sure you speak very good Mali. But the actual translation of that song is "Marriage does not suit all women," which I thought was a bit of a double joke, which... as fashion is supposed to solicit marriage, I think, possibly, one of its roles.
Ali Fakhrouri says in the sleeve note that people say from here to Timbuktu as though it's the other end of the world. And he said, I'm from Timbuktu, and in fact, it's at the heart of the world.
Quite right.
Which is why he was able to get people like Rai Kuda to come and play on Bondi from talking Timbuktu. We're going to divert just for a moment from our fashion show, for a piece of Beethoven. I knew, I think, that Beethoven would be a composer you might be interested in because you wrote on your blog recently about hearing Joshua Bell playing on his Stradivarius, in fact, at the Cadogan Hall, a concert that included Beethoven and Mendelssohn, I think.
Yes, and Bruch, I think. I'd never seen him before. I'd never been able to get in because he's so popular and famous. And he conducts and plays, which is incredibly disconcerting if you think he's going to fall off his stool while he's doing one or the other. But what a triumph he is. My only excuse coming off the catwalk for this piece of Beethoven is that it's just wonderful. And I heard it in my car, so it's extremely dangerous driving behind me because I'm trying to write things down as I go. And I just loved it.
part of the second movement of the Beethoven Violin Concerto in D, Opus 61, with Itzhak Perlman playing the violin and the Philharmonia Orchestra conducted by Carlo Maria Giulini. It has an extraordinarily strong yearning quality to it.
Yes, I agree. It's exquisite. I did sit here thinking I could drift 20 girls in white chiffon through it just to explain why it's here. But it is incredibly yearning and longing and beautiful melody.
Quite interesting because from a sort of technical point, you have the orchestra coming down a scale and the violin is just one note off doing a kind of decoration back onto it, which gives you that slightly lacrimose sound, almost as though tears are falling.
Yes, I agree. You could almost paint what you've just said. I kind of see it.
Back to the catwalk for our next music, Caroline Charles.
Oh, my Gottschalk. Well, I've had this as a present for many years, and I've often tried to use it, and various producers have gone, oh, no, can't have that. It's an early piece, and it's an early instrument, and it's, well, you'll love it. It's very, very upbeat. I read about him recently that his mother was a French Creole, which it always is a glamorous thing, isn't it, to say, and that he worked in Paris and, of course, met Chopin. And I love the idea of this man touring during the US Civil War. I mean, how brave is that? With one of those sort of upright pianos, I suppose. I love it. I hope you like
it. He had a nanny who introduced him to the folk melodies of the slaves, I think.
Yes.
And he plundered those.
Well, good for him.
Certainly great fun, and not a million miles from being almost a Scott Joplin rag.
It is very like. But can you imagine putting girls who can really dance, or dancers even better, on a catwalk to that?
Cheeky, probably.
Very cheeky. I love it so much. It makes me want to dance just sitting here.
That was La Galina, a Cuban dance by Luis Mauro Gottschalk. And it was played by Richard Burnett on, you might like to know, a historic Broadwood piano, which is obviously the right sort of period for the music. Caroline, Shostakovich is a composer who, by and large, we think of as being a bit dour in sometimes. I mean, in the best sense of the word, somebody who was at the wrong end of Stalin's recriminations and who lived a life constantly under the threat of death, really. I mean, he really had quite a bad time from that point of view. So one doesn't necessarily think of him as having a great sense of humour. But in fact, he did, as his arrangement of T for Two, for example, would demonstrate.
Exactly. Now, I took a long time to come to him because of this darkness. And when I was lucky enough to find the jazz suite, I was very excited because it's so jazzy and it's so much, again, another dance piece, really. I do just love this Shostakovich. I hope you do too.
It's very redolent of a period, that music, isn't it?
It's like a mime artist would work to it, don't you think? Or maybe it's been used in a lot of movies.
Yes, it takes one kind of into a sort of black and white world,
yes,
where one could see people doing rather strange things. So there's even a kind of slight Berlin sound to it for me.
Yes, a lot of shadow I see in it and sort of Hitchcocky maybe movements.
That's The Waltz from the Jazz Suite No. 1 by Shostakovich, and it was played by members of the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, with Ronald Brautigan playing the piano, conducted by Ricardo Chailly. So where have we got to now, Caroline Charles, in your show?
Well, we've got to Mr. Gershwin. I mean, you have to have Mr. Gershwin somewhere in this lineup, I feel. And he's done famously Funny Face and famously Rhapsody in Blue and so on. I love his Porgy and Bess, but it doesn't really fit on the catwalk, unfortunately.
It's interesting that Gershwin is one of those sort of streetwise musicians, and they tend to be American, who manage to cross the boundary between classical and popular stroke jazz quite effortlessly. I mean, very often music which tries to combine both can fall flat on its face, but it seems to be a very natural part of the American musical life.
Do you think his parents coming from Russia had something to do with it, like Shostakovich? Do you think there is a cross there, or is it a new world?
I think it was an absorption of the blues and the American popular musical scene and jazz. And he also knew how to orchestrate, of course. So it seemed to plug into a sensibility. Whereas quite often when composers try and do what you might like to call crossover music now, it just doesn't sound right. You know, when you hear very famous opera singers singing numbers from the musical, or vice versa, it just doesn't sound right.
No, it doesn't. But when Matthew Bourne takes the Tchaikovsky and gets all the people to jive to it, the dancers, I mean, there's another crossover that really works.
Well, like getting men to be swans.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. What is it that you've chosen by Gershwin?
I've chosen Oscar Peterson playing the piano, Strike Up the Band.
That would make a very cheerful ending, actually.
Very cheerful ending. You have to say bravo, don't you?
And wonderfully played by Oscar Peterson, the piano, Barney Kessel, guitar, Ray Brown, bass, and played so rhythmically that they didn't need a drummer.
No.
That was Gershwin's Strike Up the Band. Caroline, when you are working with these girls, do you tend to use the same ones quite often, ones that you get to know?
Well, we try to, but they disappear faster than you can believe, because half of them are on their way somewhere, half of them are on their way to university, half of them are bored with it. Do you blame them? It's lovely to find a girl three seasons running that you know. And they're very rarely English. They're nearly always 5'10" with huge feet. And you have to, they don't all have huge feet. But they're very, very willing. And if you give them a scenario in the tiny rehearsal time, you might be able to squeeze in and you tell them. They really take to it, and it's much easier than just walking with a grumpy face up and down, up and down.
When you were creating clothes for Diana, Princess of Wales, I seem to remember that there was quite a sort of tweedy look, wasn't there?
Well, originally, she had a very pretty little green tartan suit from us, which had a tiny little fitted bodice and a rather soft skirt, because the bigger soft loose skirts were fashionable. And she came back and back for different versions of that sort of thing. I think she felt it suited her, she liked it, and she had it in velvet and this and that. She definitely had her style at the very beginning, which was interesting, and she stuck with it until quite long on.
With somebody like that, do you let them lead the way, or can you influence them?
She didn't ask me do something special for me. She said, show me what you do. Oh, I'll have that. And then she'd say, my arms are long. And I'd go, oh, well, we'll make sure the sleeves are long enough. She was a very joyful and easy person to dress.
Did you like her?
Oh, very much. Mm. She was tall and blonde. I mean, you know, there's a start.
A sad ending, though.
Oh, tragic.
In fact, this piece that we're going to come to now, having just said that, has a kind of meditative quality, doesn't it? And I think you learnt it on the piano yourself.
I did, over many, many years. I longed to play the piano. I've given up the longing now. But I started at school and my father begged me not to practice at home. So that didn't go very well. And then, for some reason, as a family, we had three pianos and two children and a piano teacher who came once a week. So I used to play for an hour at night. And the Sati, which we're going to hear, was about as difficult as I ever managed to achieve. That's not to do him down, but my piano days were not good. I just liked the idea of it.
But you know what I mean about it having a slightly meditative, maybe not when you play it, but this piece.
It definitely does, even when I play it. Now, I think it's very, very nice. And I think for my audience at this fashion show that they need a little calm and a little quiet. Thank you.
We heard Pascal Roger playing Gymnopédie No. 1 by Satie. Mozart next.
Well, I did brave it because Mozart is just top of the pops, and I put the whole show on to Mozart. Nobody complained. Everybody looked a bit confused, but then they got to love it. But then I noticed one of the bloggers saying, went to the Caroline Charles show, it was just like being in church. And I thought, which church? That's a very interesting church. But I can't say that I have not loved Mozart always, whether I'm at the opera or just listening to music without visuals. To me, he's a genius.
Interestingly enough, and I suppose this is a mark of his genius, the flute was in some ways his least favourite instrument.
Bother. Well,
but he still managed to conjure up, because he's a great composer,
yes,
wonderful things for
and
it.
And so witty, and I don't know, what a man.
Thank you. The Andante in C for flute and orchestra, Kirkel 315, by Mozart, played by Aurel Nicolet with the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra, conducted by David Zinman. However he thought about the flute, of course he also wrote an opera called The Magic Flute, so clearly saw its potential.
Yes, he definitely did.
As we were listening to Mozart, Caroline Charles, it occurred to me, Mozart, of course, was a master of variation form. And it seemed to me that repetition in music is something that we rely on, actually, more heavily than listeners possibly always realise. And I imagine it's something that you also use quite a lot, even if you're nervous of it being too obvious. Or maybe you're not. Maybe you rejoice in that.
I think you do need to establish a beat that is recognisably yours and that works in order just to stay doing what you like doing, i.e. designing clothes. But there has to be constant change in the beat. And it isn't like music where you can... Well, perhaps it is like music where you can just turn it into another key, which seems to be a recurring way composers have worked. I find that each season, slightly innocently, feels like a new beginning. And I love that. I'm quite in love with it, in fact. And I'm fed wildly much by textile companies who bring most glorious things. And off you go again, whole new beginning.
But like any composer of originality, I do think there is a look to your clothes, even as they change, where one can recognise a sort of thumbprint, which, I mean, is a compliment, of course.
Thank you. Well, I like clothes to be... My staff always say, please don't use the word useful, but I really like things to be useful, and I like them to move, and I like them to be pretty around the face and good in silhouette and all the things that I think enhance a woman's beauty. And I like her to be warm enough or cool enough. So I suppose that is my stamp, yes.
Because one does see things, you know, more exotic, eccentric things in magazines where you think... How many people could seriously wear that at any ordinary event?
Well, Alexander McQueen is the all-time star of what you're saying. The shows are just unbelievably good, and I'm sure the music is heaven to go with it. But I agree with you, do worry about that feathered dress if it's going to be able to go to a concert in it.
Now, you talked just now about seasons, and we're coming to September. From the Four Last Songs by Strauss. I think you use this for a very specific purpose, don't you?
Well, I have used it twice at least, and I've used all sorts of these huge pieces for the bride, even if the bride isn't in white. You need in some way to conclude this show. And it nearly always reduces people to tears backstage, who are all supposed to be putting the bride's feathers on or something. And usually the small Italian hairdresser, who's the head of the team, is clinging to me crying, particularly if it's Maria Callas. On this occasion, I think it's Kiri. But this Richard Strauss piece, of all the many beautiful things he wrote, does seem to touch an audience, and I find the bride just goes beautifully with it.
Well, what might make them cry even more is if you tell them that although September is not the last of the four songs in the order in which they tend to perform them, it is actually the last one that he wrote. And just to drag out yet another tear, he didn't live to hear them.
None of them. How tragic.
Thank you.
When you think how expansive Strauss was in some of his operas, Der Rosenkavalier, for example, he's really very concise in these songs.
Yes. And was he very ill at the end, and this was how he...
He'd lived quite a long life. I just think it was coming to an end.
Coming to an end, yes. Yeah. No, I think it's very precise, as you say.
Of course, I think in some ways he was a slightly broken person, because if you think of Metamorphosen, which was written, a piece for strings, in memory, really, of the bombing of Dresden. He'd lived through the war, and he'd seen an order completely shattered, a world, if you like. And then he had been slightly associated with the Nazis. He died in 1949, and the first performance of the Four Last Songs was in 1950 in the Royal Albert Hall, when, interestingly, Kirsten Flagstadt sang the songs with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by none other than Wilhelm Furtwängler. So quite a historic occasion, and sadly he just missed it. September, from the Four Last Songs by Strauss, Kyrie Kanoa with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Andrew Davis. I was very delighted to see at the end of your list, Caroline Charles, the name Cesaria Evora.
Good. Do you love her?
Well, I think she's just a wonderful performer, yes.
So do I. Did we see her at the Barbican? Not together, sadly, but I'm sure I saw her there. I think she sort of did her songs and then wandered off and maybe lit a cigar and maybe stood and maybe sat down. She's an extraordinary performer. And I felt at the end of my show we shouldn't go out with the sadness of Richard Strauss. We should go out with something as lovely as Cesaria does. And I've also used her, I'm afraid to say, as an opener as well. She's just an extraordinary performer, isn't she? And that Cabo Verde has also taken off in a big way for popular listening.
But there's so much of life lived in their voices, these singers, I think.
Yes, that's it. I wonder if that is really true or whether they just have these voices. They're just born that way.
Well, I think it's both. I mean, they're not the product of instant pop success, these people. They've lived their lives and they've learnt their trade.
Oh, yes. No, they wouldn't go for anything so cheap and cheerful as top 10, would they? They just do it because that's what they do.
So the music, therefore, and the singing has not only an authenticity, but I think an integrity too.
Yes, I think that comes through very, very strongly.
The song she's going to sing is Cincirote, and Cincirote is a small bird of the Cape Verde Islands, which, of course, is where Cesaria Evora comes from. And I think what she's sort of saying is, to a gossip at the door, listen, you talk too much, you talk like a cincirote on the fig tree. I'm not going to listen to all this gossip.
Onde a menina, a boca tem comparação. Bota papia de máxima, tintirote na figueira. És boa fama, tudo alguém já tá com cheiro. Queres boca grande e raganhão, bota papia mais que ninguém. Onde a menina, a boca tem comparação. Bota papia de máxima, tintirote na figueira. És boa fama, tudo alguém já tá com cheiro. Que esboca grande já ganhou, bota papinha mais que ninguém. Mas flá do flá, minha boca castalã, na minha porta nunca creio o diabo, nem mantenha cabo flá. Mas flá do flá, minha boca castalã, na minha porta nunca creio o diabo, nem mantenha cabo flá. Doce boquei na bosneira, aguenta na borrabo. Vamos a mim, o teme de figura. Gosse e boquei na bosneira. Aguenta lá o rabo. Vamos a mim, o teme de tribuna. Mas flá do flá, minha boca castalã. Na minha porta nunca creio o diabo, nem mantenha cabo flá. Mas flá do flá, minha boca castalã. Na minha porta nunca creio o diabo, nem mantenha cabo flá. Thank you. si boquei na bosneira. Buenta na borrabo, pa mamim um teme de tribunal. Da si boquei na bosneira. Buenta na borrabo, pa mamim um teme de tribunal. Ma flá do flá, minha bota castalã. Na minha porta já creu o diabo, nem mantenha camuflado. Mas flá do flá, minha bota castalã. Na minha porta já creu o diabo, nem mantenha camuflado. Mas flá do flá, minha bota castalã. Na minha porta já creu o diabo.
Cincirote by Danny Carvalho, sung by Cesaria Evora. Well, thank you very much, Caroline Charles, for taking us on this musical walk down your catwalk, as it were.
Well, it all made me want to dance, or a lot of it did.
Absolutely, but that's not a bad thing at all.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Caroline Charles was talking to Michael Barclay. Well, there's no edition of Private Passions next Sunday, but in a fortnight's time, Michael's Christmas guest will be the actress Dame Diana Rigg. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3. The producer of today's programme was Sarah Cropper. Well, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome along to Radio 3 from me, Ian Skelly. I'm here to guide you through our programmes this afternoon, which continue in just a moment with a visit to 16th century Italy, the story of the writer whose words inspired some of the great master musicians of the Renaissance. Find out who he was in the Early Music Show, which is next here on BBC Radio 3. That's after a summary of the news this lunchtime, with the time now at 1 o'clock. It's read by Jill Anderson.
19 senior Conservatives have formed a group to campaign in support of same-sex marriage. They include the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, and the Education Secretary, Michael Gove. David Cameron favours changing the law to allow same-sex marriages, but more than 100 Conservative MPs are expected to oppose such a move in the Commons next year. Opponents of the Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi have dismissed his decision to annul a decree which gave him far-reaching new powers. They say his action is a political manoeuvre and are demanding that he go further by postponing a referendum on a controversial new constitution. The South African leader, Jacob Zuma, has visited the former president, Nelson Mandela, in hospital in Pretoria. Mr. Mandela, who's 94, has undergone tests, but details about his condition are unclear. President Zuma said he'd spent a comfortable night and was looking well. The owners of the Australian radio station, whose DJs made the prank call to the hospital treating the Duchess of Cambridge, have said they will cooperate fully with all investigations. In a letter to the King Edward VII Hospital in London, Southern Cross Austereo said it was taking immediate action to review its broadcasting processes. The nurse who received the call, Jacintha Saldana, was found dead on Friday. Three teenage boys have been charged in connection with rioting in North Belfast last night. Two of the boys are aged 13 and one is 14. They're due to appear at the city's youth court tomorrow, charged with public order offences, including rioting and causing criminal damage in the Newton Abbey area. Police in Bangladesh have fired tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse opposition activists attempting to enforce roadblocks across the country. Police said demonstrators hurled petrol bombs and set fire to vehicles. The main opposition party and its allies are demanding the restoration of a caretaker administration to oversee the next parliamentary election. And the weather, it should stay dry, but with a brisk northerly wind in most places this afternoon. But there could be some patchy showers in northern Scotland, the southwest of England and South Wales. That's the BBC News. It's 2 minutes past one.
Jill, thank you very much. Well, in an hour from now, we'll take you to the 10th British Composer Awards concert, which took place recently at Goldsmiths Hall in London. Performances of music by those composers who won the awards. Music ranging from chamber and liturgical to contemporary jazz and sonic art. That's all in an hour from now. Time first to hark back in time, though, for the Early Music Show, presented by Catherine Bott.
Hello. In today's programme, the life and immense influence of a troubled 16th century Italian poet whose words were set to music by, Well, just about everyone. Torquato Tasso. That's a name that gets dropped into programme notes a lot, as do the titles of his two most famous literary works, La Gerusalemme Liberata and Aminta. We're thankful for the Monteverdi madrigals and Handel operas that his words ignited. But the man himself is a bit of an unknown quantity. He had a tragically blighted life and didn't even live long enough to enjoy his coronation by the Pope as King of Poets. But he's worthy of a proper celebration and an early music show to himself, with a soundtrack of masterpieces. First, to set the mood, some Monteverdi, the impassioned madrigal from his second collection, Se tu mi lassi perfida tuo danno. If you leave me, traitress, the hurt will be yours. Do not think that without you my life would be wretched. Lovelorn Madrigal by Monteverdi, sung by Concerto Italiano, directed by Rinaldo Alessandrini. Torquato Tasso didn't supply the texts for all of Monteverdi's second book, but his poetry, as there, sums up the complexity and passion of the Italian madrigal. Tasso was born on March the 11th, 1544, in Sorrento, in the Kingdom of Naples. His father was the nobleman and poet Bernardo Tasso, and his mother was an aristocrat from Tuscany. A good start, you might say. But then Bernardo fell foul of the Spanish governors of Naples. He was declared a rebel, and his assets were confiscated. By the age of 8, Torquato was living with his mother and sister in Naples, being educated by the Jesuits and attracting attention for his intellectual precocity and his religious fervour. While visiting his father in Rome, the boy learnt of the sudden death of his mother in what we would now call suspicious circumstances. Her estate, too, vanished, and his sister married beneath her just to get to a place of safety. Father and son, buffeted by poverty and grief, stuck together, and in 1557 Bernardo was offered a job at the court of Urbino, where at least he and his intellectual son could enjoy the high-minded cultural climate. Torquato was befriended by the nobility and grew up to be good-looking as well as learned. He would have to earn a living, though. His father sent him to Padua to study law. But it was philosophy and poetry that filled his heart and occupied his days. At the age of 18, he produced the narrative poem Rinaldo, an attractive blend of classical verse and epic romance. Torquato seems, like Byron, to have awoken and found himself famous. His proud father allowed the poem to be printed and agreed to let his son enter the service of Cardinal Luigi d'Este in Ferrara.